This is the October 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net. And from StrategicFarmMarketing.com, we're joined both by Dave Chatterton and Danny Poff. Let's get just a few questions that we ought to answer for today, kind of a list of things that we should talk about here on Commodity Week. Kurt Kimmel, we'll start with you.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts. I guess we can talk about some of the technical action we saw here on Thursday. Also, we can maybe, touch on some South American weather and prospects there. Then thirdly, probably this Chinese, this demand's going to come forward.
Danny Poff, anything from you on your list that we should talk about for the day?
I think the soybean yield in U.S. might be in question moving forward, although it's a smaller part with the Brazilian crop, maybe a bigger factor moving forward.
And Dave Chatterton, what's on your list?
Yeah, Todd, I think, good topics from both the other gentlemen here. And I think a couple other things. I mean, we're kind of past, the store sell argument. We're still finishing up harvest here, but it's quickly going to be behind us. And so I think it's a question of the roadmap going forward. And one of the things that I think we haven't talked about enough in the industry or in the marketing side is the election and what effect it may have. You have two very, what I'll call polar, viewpoints on global trade, on biofuels from the different candidates here. And one, a victory for one side, I think maybe means one thing. It could mean a trade war in the sense of Trump. A victory on the other side, and a Harris Walsh victory could mean, something in the biofuel space and different things. So a lot of implications there. And I think the market is a little perplexed of how to position for that.
Interesting. I guess we'll grab hold of the third rail today and find out what happens. I was interested in some of the strategic farm marketing things that have been coming out as related to crop insurance and how farmers ought to be dealing with that and some of the spreadsheets you've been thinking about and what they can check. Can you talk me through that just a little bit? Because now producers are in the field, they get a sense of their yields, and those all play into what the payouts might be if there are any for crop insurance, and that'll come in November.
Yeah, so we're in the pricing, the fall price discovery window right now for corn and soybeans. I think today we were at like a 419 and a 1024-ish compared to the spring prices. So, Todd, in a revenue insurance product, you have two, keep in mind you have two moving pieces, and you have the price and you have the yield. And in the case like we're at this year, very similar to last year, where we have a price decline from the spring till the fall, even with average yield, you could still maybe yield your or still work your way into a claim on that revenue insurance. Depends on the level of insurance that you have. It depends on what your yields are. Depends on where we end up with that October price, but certainly something to be monitoring. And I think, as to Danny's point, particularly on soybeans, where the yields have been, I'll call them more variable, maybe a little disappointing in a few cases. So something to definitely keep an eye on. We're also, through what would have been the margin protection, window. That was a September 15th deadline. But some changes with ECO and looking into the spring meant that margin protection really wasn't a player this fall.
Yeah, something we can maybe take up a little bit later is the ECO, SCO. Gary Schnitke at the University of Illinois saying that in the coming year, that may be an option that producers really should consider as it's related to their crop insurance products. We'll talk about that at a later date. Let's continue to talk about what the marketplace looks like. What are the fundamentals that the market is watching at this point, and how have they been moving both corn and soybeans, along, I think, importantly, with wheat, which has been suffering again through dry conditions, but the market's not convinced?
Well, the main fundamental news is, of course, yields. As producers kind of wrap up harvest, we're hearing some accurate yield reports or fine-tune some yield reports. I know one guy was harvesting, and his first couple of fields were average, a little above average, and his last farm he's on, he said, I had to check to make sure I'm in the right field because it's much better than I thought. So most producers are pleasantly surprised. So we're going to dial in a production number here real quickly, and we're going to have adequate supplies to work with. There's some areas where we got to find a home for some grain. And probably the biggest fundamental thing I observed here is we're seeing the spreads narrow. What I mean by that, the November's gaining on January beans, these corn's gaining on March corn, and the commercials just hate that. They've been wanting that spread to widen out, and harvest pressure is not happening. So somebody's caught short up front here, narrowing that spread. And one other thing too, to mention here on the fundamental picture and trying to find a home for this grain, if you are a cash seller, you need to replace it the day you sell it, because no more than you sell that grain, something will happen here and you'll end up chasing it and buying it back higher. Because I don't foresee a large rally to the upside, but you don't want to get caught chasing a bite and all of a sudden we come back down and test the low.
It's Kurt Kimmel. Danny Pfaff is with us as well. Danny, so when you think about those spreads and it narrowing up, what does it tell you about this marketplace at this point? Is somebody really caught, or is there something else in this that's taking place that allows it to narrow up? And I suppose if both of you maybe could talk about the trying to capture the carry, which we've discussed a lot over the last month, and whether that's still there or whether that's disappearing with this change in the market.
Well, it's all about need for movement up front. For the bushels that have to go to town and they need a home, there's no capturing the carry. You're stuck in the nearby. And to Kurt's point just 10 days ago, that November, January was an 18-cent carry, and going home tonight was a -9. So if you are needing to roll those hedges to try to, you know, capture what you can out of the bin, I would probably do it sooner than later, just because that's going against you here. As you know, what happens is this harvest wraps up around here. We're probably, 90% done on soybeans. And just like that, basis starts coming back, spreads start coming in. These commercials are looking for ownership. And I think some other things have been going on as far as them selling meal. And at some point, they have to stay in line and have adequate soybean ownership too. So if you can't buy beans because people are focused on corn, you buy the spread.
Because you mentioned bean meal, and I'm wondering about the increased capacity within the industry to crush soybeans, whether that has created an issue for them, and that's why they're trying to sell meal, and what that means. I don't know whether I understand it, but or even if it plays a role here.
It certainly plays a role. I mean, supply is supply, I guess, in the view of the marketplace, Todd, and more supply means, you know, it has to go somewhere. I think that's complicated by the news we got this week out of Europe, where the EU confirmed a 12-month delay on the proposed legislation or restrictions or tariffs, if you will, regarding South American beans and the deforestation issue. So that was set to take effect at the first of the year. It's now been delayed another 12 months. So the meal offtake from these new plants that was thought to go to Europe is now in question. They can still go to South America, Argentina in particular, and source that meal. And that creates kind of a supply imbalance, if you will, where all of a sudden we've got more supply than what we wanted. I think you have two very distinct kind of demand and maybe even price directional profiles when you look at the corn versus the soybeans. And the soybeans certainly have a very heavy, fundamentally burdensome type of a balance sheet. And with, you know, weather now improving in South America, particularly in central and northern Brazil, and planting kicking off and projections still coming in for area to increase and for even an average yield to produce a record crop, looks like those fundamentals could get worse, not better, as we go along.
Just as an explanation, non-deforested, as it was defined by the European Union, means that the land that the soybean would have been grown on originally was not covered by trees in any way. So it was never deforested. That would, for example, remove some of the South American or Brazilian soybeans from being able to be imported into the U.S. And here in the United States, they were paying I'll call it a small, relatively speaking, premium for non-deforested soybeans. If you live in the prairie, the Grand Prairie, particularly here in the United States and where we live, almost all the acres were going to be non-deforested because they were prairie land and not forested to begin with. Given that explanation, we still have a crop to sell. We still have a lot of crop to sell. We still have a lot of extra bushels to sell. And we have a really low price. I think the average cash price for corn was just under $4, according to bar chart across the nation. At $3.99, the average price for soybeans was $9.40. And this is causing consternation for producers. They really need to figure out how to get as much money out of each bushel that they have. And they have extra bushels. So how do they do the bushel times price and come up with a way to earn an income?
Well, that's a moving target, and I wish I could, I should, I would. And everybody's got their track record out there. You can see who was aggressive and who was not, but that's history. What we've got to do, 90% of our question is, what do I do now? And it varies from individual to individual. We've been kind of in the mode to move some cash if the basis isn't real wide. It depends on farm storage or commercial storage. We've been talking about that forever, but we've been doing some replacements with the idea we could have a little bit of seasonal up here and try to capture a little dead cat bounce here as we go into Thanksgiving or first part of December. The bottom line is you got to stay flexible in your marketing and be able to meet some cash flow needs as we go forward here. If you look at the long-term price chart, whenever we were at high levels, we're up there for 2 to 3 years, and when we come down to unprofitable levels, we're usually down here for maybe 2-3 years. And a lot of these projections are we're going to be losing anywhere from $50 to $100 an acre. So you got to use some financial management here and kind of meet cash flow needs, but keep some type of position in the marketplace, covered position in the marketplace.
Danny, your follow-up on the marketing?
Well, I would say 2 months ago in the kind of the terrible dog days of August, we were, and the industry was way behind on sales. I think almost everyone would agree. And I feel really good. 3-4 weeks ago, we really caught up sales, especially these bushels that have to go to town across the scale. They need a home, you know? So I would say our group has caught up anywhere from 60 to 80% sold, really across the board, and feel okay about that sitting here today. But that doesn't change the fact that you still have those bushels that, you know, I got phone calls today, guys I haven't talked to in years, like, hey, what do you do? And it's a tough situation, but with this spread coming in on beans, and if you throw it on basis because you want upside and want to limit what you're having to do, that's kind of the opposite. Now that spread isn't as bad of a situation to roll to the Jan, it's not as wide. So that's not maybe the worst idea if you want to keep upside on X amount of bushels, like Kurt says. But I think most guys, let's be honest, it's a minimizing loss situation. You got to realize the value of money. Interest rates need to be in your mindset when you're thinking about, should I just sell this? Maybe I can do it cheaper on the board.
Time to open the savings account if you just use a checking account for the farm.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, certainly the cost of money is something that you have to understand and have your arms wrapped around and not just have your head in the sand. I think, you know, this all comes back to discipline and having a plan. If you were trying to capture carry, you needed to have that plan in place before we got to harvest and things started moving. If you're trying to move bushels off the combine that needed to move, same story. And we've had a very nice rally here, and things are going, and we're hopeful that, you know, we can get that dead cat bounce, I think, that Kurt was talking about. I think you have to realize that we're in this fundamental situation where the upside becomes rather limited. Without a weather problem in South America or a lot more demand showing up in this market, and when I say demand, that's particularly Chinese demand, where we're very far behind where we'd like them to see, you know, especially corn last year, good example. They had booked 16 million metric tons at this point, you know, of the year between Brazil and the U.S. This year, they have booked 1 million metric tons. So their economy is slowing and their purchases have been slow. We've got a big South American crop coming on for all intents and purposes. So we're playing defense. And I've said this all along, you have to have modest expectations, have a plan, have offers working. So when we get that blip that Kurt mentioned and you get this quick move, that you're able to get some pricing off and move things. I think it's a much more of a sell and defend type of an argument than it is, let's stick our head in the sand and wait for that summer rally next summer. Because if it doesn't come, we're in a world of hurt.
In South America, Argentina and Brazil, what are the fundamentals of the weather at this point? It appears rainfall has finally started in the center west. That's in Brazil. Argentina, some rainfall, but they've got some real issues.
They're directly opposite of us when we're harvesting, they're planting, and vice versa. So it's real critical as they move forward here. But they're entering their wetter season, and they're getting the moisture they need. So the weather guys are going to get that card to play here as we move through the winter and see if they can receive the time and rains and so forth. And the key, once we get the beans in the ground, would be that second corn crop. If they go ahead and get that in and how that materializes as we move forward.
I tell you, Danny, you probably have been watching Argentina, particularly as the margin, maybe more soybeans coming out of that nation than in the past years because of the issues they had with an insect and corn the last season. Not by a small number either, by a fairly large, something like 18 to 20%, if I remember correctly. But it's a big increase. How are you paying attention to the planting season there? And it's not yet begun.
Yeah, I think we need to keep an eye on them, obviously. USDA said that'd be around 51 million metric tons in Argentina and 169 million metric tons in Brazil. I think CONAB was a little lower than that, maybe 166 or so. But either way, bottom line, the global supply increase is almost impossibly bearish if it happens. We got to get there. And last year, November, we saw a really good rally right after harvest on dryness in Brazil. But in particular with southern Brazil, our sources in Paraná, they're actually all on pace and they're okay. They're not as behind as parts of Mato Grosso, which kind of gets the headlines. But as you mentioned, the weather pattern is changing in their favor and they're not too worried about it. And really the market, really it's more about timing and availability of that soybean crop. If harvest is delayed, not only will it push back safrinha planting and thus production issues, but availability to China. But with Paraná being on pace, our sources are thinking that story's not really there for the bulls, unfortunately.
Coming back here to the United States, do we have logistical issues whether they be rail, particularly to the southeast, or the river, which still hasn't come back up completely?
We do, Todd. I don't know that it's the driving force behind the direction of prices in the market right now. We have logistical issues just about every year. We certainly have some low water issues south of St. Louis and particularly Memphis and south that have been resulting in higher barge freight, lower drafts, and less efficiency. I think that's part of this closing up the spread a little bit in beans where the exporters have to bid up. Part of that's probably likely a subpar quality crop coming out of the southern Midwest and the Delta where it's a blending issue. We have rail issues both into Canada and into Mexico. The Mexico, rail shipments were recently suspended, then reinstated again over logistical issues and backups. So we're always going to live with those. But I think at the end of the day, the end user and the consumer realizes that the supply is out there. And whether it's soybeans that are primarily in the hands of commercials or corn that is primarily in the hands of the farmers, it's a basis and spread issue to wriggle that away if need be. And I think they're still, they're not worried. They're not panicking. And again, I don't think, as opposed to seeing fund buying in the market related to those logistical issues, I think what we're finding is fund selling. And open interest in futures this week has almost exploded in corn and soybeans. And that tells us that we've got fresh shorts coming back into the market, whether that's based on a fundamental play, a technical play, the funds having erased most of their short and now going back the other way, or there's a new term in the trade, we'll go back to the third rail, the Trump trade, that's the fear of the trade war, all kinds of things going on as there usually are. But I don't think logistics are necessarily driving the boat at this particular point.
Funny, because I was just about to turn your attention to the presidential election and what that might look like. The National Corn Growers Association this week and some of the state associations as well came out with a study and press releases discussing what trade might look like after the election, depending on who would be elected. They didn't actually name one side or the other, but it's fairly clear. In the press release, it talked about 2018, historical context as well, going further back. Trade and tariffs always are an issue for agriculture, and that trade lost, in their opinion, on this study would not return within the decade, that it would take that long to recover. So what are you thinking about as it relates to marketing and either a Republican or a Democrat in the White House?
Well, very loaded question and no hate mail. And I'm not picking a side. I think what we can tell is a couple of things. One is that it's a very tight race from all the polling that goes on, and believe whose polls you want or the others that you don't. It's neck and neck, and I think it's going to be that way all the way into the election. That could cause, certain financial and macro market implications if there's lawsuits and delays and different things that happen and all the pomp and circumstance. But at the end of the day, it's the unknown, I think, Todd, that really gives the market some heartburn. And if you try and identify the easiest possible risk, it's Trump having said that on day one, I'll institute these tariffs and I'll basically start a trade war with China. I think in this particular case, they're much more, they're in a better position than they were in 2018 to weather any kind of 2019, to weather that kind of a situation, because their reserves are high. We're looking at, you know, a record crop in South America, potentially, particularly out of Brazil. They're prepared for it. They've been down this road. Our sources in China don't seem to think it's as big a deal as we think it is here. But when you watch the action of the market, I certainly have to kind of, you know, give credit to or think that part of this decline that we've seen here over the last 5 to 10 trading sessions, that's definitely in play. I think that the Harris win and the whole green issue, biofuel issue, is a slower developing type of an issue, and the market's not as afraid of that at this particular point as it is the Trump victory.
On that note, no matter who comes into office, China has not reacted yet to the Biden administration's 100% tariff on importing EVs from that nation. Canada had followed suit, and they are suffering the consequences there, about a 25% drop in what their exports might be, as it's related to not rapeseed, but canola. Both are the same. And so how do you think about this?
Well, number one, we got to develop a relationship with these other countries. You got the Chinese premier and Putin develop a relationship. You got China develop a relationship with the Southern Hemisphere financial interest building there. So if you're going to increase trade, you got to develop some relationships. As far as the political atmosphere, I'd be more scared of the activists. They've got a lot more money than the farm economy has to promote. And I think what we can do as farmers or agriculture people is educate the general public on what's going on with this green movement, because the public kind of looks at TikTok or Facebook or doesn't really understand what's going on. So I think the emphasis is to educate the public.
Are you thinking that they need to be educated on climate change, changing climate that Eric Snodgrass might talk about, and how that has happened since 1980, the lengthening of the growing season in the United States, the shift of the growing season in the U.S. in different places. For instance, it's a month longer in parts of North Dakota at this point, or some other thing.
Well, all of the above, and you include California, the propositions there with livestock and so forth. So I think it's just an all-round educational process.
Anything to add from your point, Danny?
Yeah, I think when you look back at 2018, the trade war, you just hear Trump trade war. But the other things that happened that year was ASF, if you guys recall, big bean acres and big bean yields. Like it was a double, triple whammy that year that really, really smoked our prices. I was in the grain industry at the time, and I remember hitting an offer at $8 cash at a processor. So it got that bad. I vividly remember that. But the other thing too, to make a point here, is one of the only bipartisan things here in our country is being kind of tough on China. So now if Trump, you know, is, you know, a little tougher than maybe a Harris administration, that's probably true. But that polls really well to be tougher on China on trade.
Indeed it does. The difference between the two, because we have a Trump administration, and if Harris were to follow the Biden administration, would leave the Trump administration tariffs in place for the most part. They've added to them at this point. Trump is suggesting a across-the-board tariff, which I want you all to address, because this is not just about China at this point. This is an across-the-board tariff on all countries, I believe 10%. 60% on China, but 10%. Mexico is our number one importer of corn from the U.S. And I'm just wondering what the reaction of those places that are outside of China might be and what that might mean.
Yeah, I don't think any of them can be really good at this particular point, Todd. And it's an open argument. I mean, the Trump philosophy is that tariffs actually work and that they bring manufacturing and jobs and, you know, people building plants and infrastructure back to the U.S. Very unproven theory, but I think there can be a holy cow moment, and that's the nice way to say it, in all of our markets, whether it be the macro or the financial or our particular markets, that all of a sudden realizes that, hey, some of these things can happen. If you look at where Trump stands and how his administration went last time, he bucked the system and he went against the establishment, but he won. He then surrounded himself with a cabinet full of establishment people to soothe those edges. This year, and if he were to win, he becomes a one-term president, and all rules are, you know, all those restrictions are lifted. He doesn't have to worry about being reelected. He has a very specific agenda of the things that he wants to do and a very aggressive way of doing them that goes against the system of the traditional, you know, economist, if you will. And so it's a very, it'll be a very, should that happen, will be a very interesting case study. But I think the market is really, you know, uneasy about that and has to deal with that at the closer we get to November.
How should producers think about this in their marketing plans? I mean, do they need to think pre and post election? Do they need to consider options now for next year? What kinds of things do they have to consider?
As far as next year, we've already started that process and, you know, trying to get our foot in the door with Dees 25 corn above 450 and Nove 25 beans above 1050 to, you know, hedge some of this risk. Because if we don't see a change in through here, the carry in the market, even the new crop, you know, can roll down. But as far as risk, talk to an elevator guy. Of all the beans that were moved into his elevator, he's bought 90% of them. So I think guys have pretty well been scared of beans and done a great job in moving beans. So I don't know if this is going to come back and bite everybody down the road, but I think the bean market's pretty well priced for the disaster.
Yeah, I think the tougher question is 2025, you know, and we have advanced sales there, 10 to 20%, you know, maybe not enough. We were just at $11 a few weeks ago. But, you know, the timing, I think, is everything. Inauguration would be January or so. The Brazil crop, not really ready in earnest until February. So timing is everything there, Todd. But let's just be honest. There's lots of speculation here.
Yeah, I mean, tongue-in-cheek, Todd, to MFP or not to MFP. who knows? So I think, you know, seriously, who knows? So the question, I think, you know, if I put myself in looking at my own farm, I have to manage my risk and I have to, you know, I have to do that job. So let's concentrate on what we do know. And what we do know is that I think it's a situation where when we look at the fundamentals and we look ahead, we're still playing defense into next year. We're looking at good crops without a weather interruption. We're looking at markets that look a little bit heavy. And I think you have to be looking ahead, working ahead, offering and booking and forward contracting ahead to try and stay ahead of that process. And whatever happens with the politics, we'll have to take on the fly. I think there could certainly, you know, be some disruptions here, both positive and negative, probably more negative, I think, at the moment here is what we've talked about. So the, you know, the more risk I can take off the table at a close to maybe slightly profitable or modestly profitable level, the more I'm interested in doing that.
We'll wrap up now. As Danny had mentioned, most would agree that China is an issue across the board, left and right. I think everybody is in agreement on that as it's related to the United States. The problem that producers, farmers deal with is that when a tariff is put on, agricultural products are the most likely target for another country to retaliate with. That happens considerably and all the time. Almond producers are just as likely to have an issue out of California as soybean producers are in Illinois. And farmers have to think, and others, about what that means going forward and adjust their marketing plans accordingly and know what they're willing and not willing to do in the future. Thank you for taking time with us today. We appreciate it. Kirk Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Thank you for being here. Danny Poff, thank you for being with us on, I think, is this your first commodity week? I believe it is. A considerably good one for you to be with us for the day. And Dave Chatterton, they're both with Strategic Farm Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.